Welcome to Blind Shovel, an arts and music podcast. This week I speak with cartoonist Margot Ferrick. Hope you enjoy.
Can you hear me okay?
I can, yeah.
Okay, cool. Good.
It's that simple.
Cool.
So where do you live?
I'm like right outside of Chicago right now.
Is that where you are from?
No, I'm from Long Island originally.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's strange. Yeah, Long Island. This type of work emerging out of Long Island is fascinating to me.
Really? Why?
I don't know. I guess because I love Billy Joel, and I just think of Billy Joel and Long Island. And I think of that persona. That's like my go-to stereotype of Long Island. I'm from New Jersey, so it's like not... We're not so different, right? New Jersey and
Long Island. I think they're pretty similar, but...
Well, there's such a poetry to your work and sensitivity. Oh,
that it's kind of, it's, you wouldn't expect from
No. What was that like? What is Long Island like? It's obviously a very long island, right?
Yeah, it's really long. That's something about it. But it's not very wide.
Next to New York City? Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, New York City is kind of like technically on Long Island.
Okay.
And then a lot of the, a lot of Long Island is kind of like part of the city. I was from Huntington, which is like right in the middle of it, basically. So I was kind of like in the suburbs, but it was sort of like a town where, I think it was like a pretty, it was just like a stop that like a lot of people would get off at for like the train. If they were commuting back and forth from like Manhattan to the suburbs.
Did you live a suburban childhood or more urban?
Yeah. No, very, very suburban.
But you could easily go to New York City, right?
Yeah. It wasn't that far of a train ride, maybe like an hour or so.
You know, I'm like 20, maybe 30 minutes from Manhattan, but I didn't like ever go to New York City. I think my parents just didn't have time. So it's weird being next to this gigantic city that's like the city for so many people, but then to not use it. I think I take it for granted to this day because I live 20 minutes from it still, but it was absolutely not part of my childhood.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like unless you have like a reason to go there, you're not going to go there. I mean, unless you work there, you have like family that you have to visit over there. It's like, why would you bother, you know?
Yeah. Museums. I remember going to them.
Yeah.
And that's it. Was that something as a child you were interested in, art or museums or thing? Were you drawing very young?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I feel like I probably went to museums as a kid, but probably just like the Met. I don't think my parents were interested in going to like MoMA or something.
You didn't have art parents, right?
No, it's weird. My mom actually has sort of sort of like an innate talent for art. But she's also like really negative about a lot of art. She only likes, I don't know, like once she was complaining to me about like, she didn't like my paintings that I was doing as an adult or as like in my late teens. And then she was like, I don't know. Can't you just like draw like heroes or something? Like, I think there's also like a bit of a language barrier. So But she was like, I don't know, like draw like a legend of something. Like, why are you doing like these stupid, like abstract paintings or whatever? Like, just do like heroes and legends. Like, I don't understand.
Oh, that's funny because I feel like you do that. You do heroic. There's a heroic quality, at least to the most recent work.
Yeah, I think so. Well, yeah, I guess I'll show her that stuff.
And maybe she was just right.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to admit that, but maybe she had a point.
Yeah, no, I have a similar thing where I feel like when I was probably a teenager until mid-20s, I made work that my parents wouldn't like. And it was almost a metric, and an inverted metric. And then I realized it's so goofy, such a goofy thing to do. And it's not like they're swooning over the things I make now, but I think there's like a kind of return that happens. And even oftentimes for people spiritually, like whatever they were raised, they go against it for those 10 years and then they kind of come humbly back towards it with some curiosity.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's definitely true for like a lot of people. I think that's true for me too.
But yeah, the work is so heroic. We got knights, we got stances, very, very clear stances. But it is, I think I showed some of your work maybe like 5 years ago, and it was, I'm trying to remember what you sent me, but it wasn't as human centric. It wasn't as, maybe it was more swan related stuff.
Oh, probably. It was like 5 years ago, because yeah, that would have been prime swan drawing time. I couldn't really draw like humans that well at that time. So
no, that's fair. But how did you do? You do life drawing?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I sort of have grown up doing that. But I used to be pretty good at drawing sort of like normal looking humans for a while, and then I think I sort of like talked myself out of it. I think, I don't know if you've had a phase like this where you sort of, when you're a bit younger, you know, you're like drawing these like certain images, and then because you're kind of like just having fun, and then at some point you get it in your head that like to become like a serious artist, you should just like avoid making anything that's too like illustrative, whatever that means for.
Yeah, yeah. For the person. I mean, like, mine was even weirder because I went to school for illustration, but I was deliberately trying to be representational within the assignments for illustration, which makes no sense. But yeah, there's like, I had some. It seems unnatural that you want to try to draw what you see initially, just as the challenge of learning.
Yeah.
And then you don't feel cool about it, so you start drawing abstracted things, because that's in school often that's what's being told to you, like that's a higher form of something, especially if you're from a suburb. I feel like you may or may not have like an inferiority about just like liking comics, cartoons, and just drawing things you like when you go to art school. And so
you know what I'm saying. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
But it's healthy, because then I think there is something to be said for understanding abstraction. But in the service of, at least for me, the ideal is in the service of something representational and tangible. And those two languages playing against each other is often very powerful. And I think what the best art does, anything that leans heavy to either or, I think will just be washed away in time. I don't imagine color field paintings to be relevant in 50 years even. I don't even think they're relevant now, to be honest, but maybe I'm insensitive to them.
I'm trying to think of, now I'm trying to like recall like all the color field paintings I've ever seen.
So, well,
like,
you wouldn't bother remembering them. No, I mean like Rothko is color field.
Oh, see, that's funny. I really like Rothko.
That's fair. I think Rothko is some of the better of that stuff.
But I feel like it. Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if it started to get like kind of like stale or like maddening, just like doing those paintings.
Well, I don't get that. Yeah, it's like reducing yourself to a. I don't know.
But if it's what you want to do, then it's also.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I like those a lot. But then there's a lot of things that might be like kind of similar, or like, I guess like cousins of that work that I don't really care about that much.
Of course, yeah. It's. I feel like I have to add a layer of performativity while looking at work like that. I don't know if that's just me, but.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I feel like this is because I like I said, I actually really like Rothko, but I feel like a while ago, I guess I would have been in my late teens, early 20s at the time. And there was like this series on PBS called The Power of Art with Simon Sharma. And I actually don't know that much about Simon Sharma, so like maybe he's actually like a lot more legit than I'm gonna like make fun of him a little bit right now. But I remember there was like it was just a series about like artists that he I guess like personally felt were like the most like powerful.
Yeah.
artists or something. Which is kind of like a but you know, it's like if it's just like according to how he feels, and it's fine. But I remember the Rothko episode is the last one, and it's also like there's an actor who's like sort of portraying the artist, and it cuts to like these sort of little like dramatic scenes. But then at the end of the episode, and it's also the end of the series, Simon Sharma's like in a museum with like an actual Rothko piece, and he's like, and you know, here I am, like I'm like paraphrasing it, maybe this is like totally inaccurate, and he goes up to it and he's like, you know, he's like human-sized paintings, and I'm gonna stand at like the recommended distance to view it. And then he's like he's standing at like the recommended ideal like viewing distance or something, and then he kind of turns to the camera and he's like, does art get any more powerful than this? I don't think so. And it sounds like his voice is maybe like cracking a little bit, like in my memory it's like he's about to cry, and then he like turns away from the camera to look at the but yeah, I mean maybe that's like
you're saying it's well yeah it's slightly implausible or
yeah it's a little I was like I mean I like these paintings a lot too, but I
have you ever cried in front of a painting?
That's a good I mean, I felt like emotionally moved. I don't think I've cried, though. I mean, it's also if you're in a museum and you're like in public.
Yeah. Well, I asked that. It's not like I do. I don't think I have. And it's not with any pride that I say that. I just. Oh, I've been teary eyed in. I think. Like in the Vatican, because it was just like so much overwhelming. I almost wonder if I get threatened by it first, like actual great art. I think I saw some Bernini's and I was like, okay, so this is the best sculpture can be, but my mind is active. It's not a thing I feel like music, where of course everyone cries to songs here and there, you know? But I'm just curious in general, like, that emotional connection to painting or visual work is very different. And I don't know. I just thought, the idea of crying in front of a Rothko is very funny to me. I think crying in front of a Caravaggio, okay, I can start to go there. Probably won't happen, but I can understand, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just going to not say anything. No, I'm just processing. Yeah, I was hoping you had cried in front of something. Just,
I think it's
rare. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
What about extreme anger from a painting?
Extreme anger.
Or art?
I don't know.
Has art ever gotten you angry?
I mean, like, I feel like I've read, or I've like, I've definitely like watched movies that made me extremely angry, but not in like a good way. It's because like really bad.
Movies are different too, because obviously movies you can cry all day.
Oh yeah, I mean it's kind of like music.
Yeah, I think it's a like, time thing. I don't know why. The element of moving through it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know like if that means
sit with it for a long time.
Yeah, you can enter it and in a different way, but it makes me wonder if you know comics, drawing, painting, etc. I think it's valid to argue there are obsolete forms in some way, you know, but I don't ultimately feel we get to choose what we're into as makers of things.
I mean, I guess like obsolete in terms of like how?
I guess the majority of humans' psychology and orientation towards certain mediums, the way their attention span or the way they receive things. Obviously, I think there was a time when someone went on a pilgrimage and showed up to a painting in a church and their head probably exploded, you know? And now, it's just another visual thing for a lot of people. And you have these mediums like film, and obviously virtual reality, I'm sure will be the next thing, that are so immersive that it just seems the majority will gravitate towards them over time. And their impact is bigger, at least emotionally and probably societally. Like, I don't think comics, I know you do painting as well. I think if I'm being realistic, these are mediums that will probably stick around, but they'll always be in the background of whatever's coming, if that makes sense.
Yeah, maybe that's true. I guess I like to think that comics are still pretty popular in like maybe other countries where there's sort of like more of a cultural thing about like reading comics. But then I wonder if, because I'm just like thinking of like manga, but then I wonder if a lot of people are actually just like waiting for like the anime adaptation of like
exactly
popular manga series. But
yeah,
we're just
in the service of something like comics as storyboarding for the next hit TV shows is appalling.
I hate thinking about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes me bummed out. But you know what? I think I was like, I don't really watch like anime that much. Or like at all, I guess. But I think I was complaining about how they're like, you know, there's always like I said, like all these people are just like watching, they're just waiting for the anime adaptation. They won't even bother reading the comic. But then one of my friends pointed out that like that is kind of frustrating, but like if you think about it, like when there's this like Netflix adaptation of this manga, I think it's sort of like it seems like there's kind of like a correlation between a series getting like a Netflix anime adaptation and then being like translated and brought over into English. And then my friend was saying like it's probably making it possible for like all these things that you really like to like be available to you. So
that's a positive friend.
Yeah, yeah. So I just try to think about that anytime I'm feeling like negative or bitter about these like anime series that I don't even watch. So
yeah, that's doesn't seem worth it.
Yeah.
But were you always, in respect to comics, when did you start doing them seriously? What age?
I don't know. It's weird because I felt like I was pretty, I felt like it was what I wanted to do when I was like 14 or 15 already. And I thought I was like pretty serious about it then, but then again, you know, I got kind of like talked out of making them, I guess, because I was like, well, I want to be like a more serious artist, or I want to do like fine art or something. So then I feel like I, maybe from like age, I don't know. I feel like I made a couple of comics when I was like in my teens, and then I sort of didn't for like a while. And then I got back into it when I was in my 20s, I guess.
Do you recall what those comics were about?
Yeah, actually I mean, it's funny because it's like, I feel like at this point I'm sort of just making comics that are more similar to the ones I made when I was like 15. But I remember this one I made. I had this whole like story in my head with my original characters and stuff. And it was sort of just like a dark fantasy about like a fallen angel. Like it was, you know, like what, like a lonely sort of like awkward sort of emo teenager would make. Mm-hmm. But yeah, one of them I actually submitted to this. There was a contest that Tokyo Pop had for a while called Rising Stars of Manga. And I like placed in one of those volumes when I was like 15 or 16.
Wow.
So I don't have the original pages anymore, but I can still look at that comic if I really want to, I guess.
Is it out there somewhere?
Yeah. It's, I think you can also like, it's been out of print for a long time, but you can find it on like archive.org and like,
oh, fascinating.
It for free. Yeah. It's not very good.
But that's an accomplishment and shows you were serious about it at a young age.
Yeah, I guess so.
So was manga a driving force behind that inspiration?
Yeah,
that's interesting to see that. You can definitely see that in the work in an indirect manner.
Yeah, I think so too.
Were you, when you were being dissuaded from this, were you in art school and drawing manga-ish stuff?
Well, I think that I had these like, I had a couple of teachers in high school who were like really, really, really good teachers. Like I feel like they kind of like, one of them especially, I think was maybe one of the best teachers I've ever had. And I think that she sort of, I don't think she was trying to dissuade me from anything. I think she was actually just trying to like challenge me because she was like, she wanted me to improve and get better. But then I think I sort of started to dissuade myself because, yeah, I don't know. And then I think also I maybe had like a couple of experiences that sort of like stuck with me like a little too much. Like I had tried to, when I was applying for college, my top choice was Cooper Union, which was mostly because it was like free tuition.
Yeah. I applied to Cooper Union. Same.
Yeah, I guess like everyone.
If you're from here and your parents are, well, middle class or suburban, they're like, why wouldn't you apply? But also, and I'm speaking for myself here, you know, you're like a teenager. There's all this institutional grandeur. It's free. It's a nice building.
It is a nice building.
Everyone keeps telling you the acceptance rate is lower than any other school.
Yeah, I mean that's part of it too, where you're like, I wanna be one of the like, how much is it? Like they take like less than 100. I don't even know anymore.
Well, no, get into that. I'm fascinated by that. So you were in that process. Oh, I remember submitting that, and I was like, what the... It felt really antithetical to my spirit at the time, and then I ended up making this kind of meta critique of them as an institution, which is very much in line with what they would have wanted, which is ironic, but...
Wait, how did you make a... how did... on your, like, application that you submitted, or, like, the work you submitted, or...
Yeah, on the application. It's such a twisted tale. And it was just full of ambivalence. I think back to that time and I just laughed because it was, what is that like? It's like the midpoint of my life right now. And there's romance involved. There's drama.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm actually really curious to hear this.
Yeah, I don't want to get too deep into it, but I understand I just remember it being like, you know, I was interested in comics, cartoons, and drawing illustrative things, and then Cooper Union, that's really not what's going on there. And
yeah, it's definitely not.
So are you saying in some sense, like, being confronted with that home test, you were like, huh, where do I fit into this more collegiate view of art?
I went to a portfolio day over there. And I think I just brought like my stupid little, like, what did I have? Like still life oil paintings that I had been working on, and like, some things that were like maybe kind of more illustrative, quote unquote. And then I had this, the person that I spoke to was like really condescending, but then I'm looking back, I'm like, okay, like I guess I kind of actually understand your reaction to me, but like her tone was kind of, to me, seemed kind of condescending, but I don't know, like, what possessed me. Yeah.
Did you get the, like, I don't remember, they like give you like a piece of paper if you were, it's like a slip. Yeah. There's like a way they were sorting people on Portfolio Day, and they'd give you like a slip if you were kind of worthy of the next.
Oh my God. Okay. I never got a slip. So that's, I remember getting, there was like a kind of like really quick sort of basic information thing that you filled out and you would hand to the person. And I don't know, like, what, I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know why I did this, but, like, I don't know if I was just like anxious and overthinking it, but I think it asks you like, oh, what are your like interests? Like, what do you actually want to do with art or something? And I wrote like costume design for some reason. And I don't know why, because I actually wasn't even that into that.
That's cool.
I guess so. I mean, I was like, I like drawing these like characters, and I think about the clothes that they wear. So I don't know why I wrote that. But then she saw it and she was like, oh, like, you know, this really isn't like the school for that, which is true. Like that's not a lie. But anyway, you know, she was just sort of like, I think your work is like too like illustrative or something. I've used that word a lot during our conversation, but
no, it's a great word. Yeah. It's cool because it's usually derogatory, but
yeah,
especially in these academic settings. But also it's just a very beautiful word.
It is a nice word. But you know, now that you said it's like usually used as sort of derogatory, I've never heard it in a context that wasn't negative. Now that I'm thinking of it, which is kind of weird, because it's like, I don't know, like, what does that word actually mean? Like,
I don't know. All I know is when I was little and I would look at, say, Alice in Wonderland, and I would see the drawings, I think by this guy, John Tenniel. I would say, oh, I want to do whatever's going on here because I like books and I like reading and I like drawing. This is the world I want to be in. And that's still true, basically. I just want total control. You know, I want to be able to write the book and draw the thing and then have a book, which is a very wonderful experience. And for me, going to school for illustration, obviously, it's usually more of a pipeline for editorial, which I understand. But that's very much not in alignment with how I see the world or what I want to be involved with. So that was a wake-up call as to what the many ways something can be illustrative, because it's such a vague thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. In fact, the other day I was interviewing Dan Nadel, the guy who did Picture Box, and he's working on a museum that George Lucas is opening, and it's called the Museum of Narrative Art. And I was like,
oh, that's pretty cool. Actually,
it does seem cool, but it's so wild how broad that category is, but almost how,
yeah,
that you can make a museum in modern context where like that was the defining feature. I thought that was very funny, because it's just like, I mean, it's huge. The majority of art history, I would assume, could be called narrative, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, probably like the vast majority.
Stories are just, I find it funny, right? Because what's cool about Jackson Pollock, for me, the story. If the story wasn't as dramatic and romantic, and he's drunk driving, and then I don't remember, there's someone's girlfriend who's, they're dying, and someone's living, and then he's kind of an asshole who's depressed, but his wife, I believe, is the only reason that he's even known, because she helps promote him. All this stuff is cool. I'd rather hear that than look at his paintings. And that could be a personal preference, but I just think humans, if we accept the fact that we're human, we can also usually accept the fact that a narrative is going to be the thing we grasp most. And any refutation of that is like, although an exercise that I think is useful for augmenting one's ability to tell an interesting story, I think, I mean, this is obviously how I feel about abstraction, but I just don't think it has enough teeth to really impact people's lives when isolated. I think when it's incorporated, as it always was within painting, in different moments, it's obviously incredibly impactful.
Yeah.
And that's what your mom was trying to tell you.
Yeah. Oh, God.
What is your mom's language barrier, by the way? What's the barrier?
She's from Korea, so she's like fluent. It's just sometimes the phrasing is a little funny or something.
Hmm. The heroic, the legendary, yeah.
Yeah, she just kept saying legend, which it's funny. Cool. I told that story to a friend who was like from, she spoke Brazilian. Mm-hmm. Originally, and then when I used the word legend, I was like, you know, my mother kept saying, why don't you draw like a legend? My friend got really confused, because for her, she was thinking of like, I wouldn't know, but I think in Portuguese, maybe like the word for subtitles is maybe like legend something. And she was like, what are you talking about? Like, she wants you to make like subtitles on your like.
That would have got you into Cooper Union, I think.
Yeah, probably.
But, sorry. It's an inappropriate joke. I just had a good question. I'm actually in the middle of trying to find this Rising Stars of Manga illustration.
Oh, yeah. I could probably link it to you.
No, I'm there. I'm just digging into
archive.org.
I'm curious how it relates. And if I can tell without knowing, scrolling through. I think.
I don't know how many. There's quite a few volumes of it. I don't know if you want me to tell you which one it is.
I think it's volume 3, no?
Yeah, it is.
I think it's always fascinating to me to see the seeds, like you said, there's like an inevitable return, like we were discussing before, where it could be depressing, I guess, if you have a cynical perspective, that you're just telling the same story over and over, and you already were trying to tell it when you were young, but I don't think that's depressing. I think that's pretty wild, and I think it's wild because it's so limiting. It's which I think is comforting, the limits of one's expression and what you should really be working on. There's really not that much, and maybe I have almost like an essential view of that, and why I am kind of, I have mixed feelings about the higher levels of art school, where it really feels like they're trying to just destroy you and then implant what is the current thing. And what I often like about comic artists is I think they, a lot of them went through that phase, which made their work much more interesting, but but they resisted it. And I don't think it's, I don't think one shouldn't go through the phase, because not going through the phase, I just imagine like web comics or something, like this style that's never been interrupted by the awkward realities of sophistication or something. And so it seems essential to kind of grapple with one's own inferiority and how comics fit into the fine art world, which has changed a lot, obviously, in the last decade, I think, in a more acceptable way. Like, I can imagine maybe going to art school now and showing the cool comics to teachers, and they'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You can continue to do that.
They'd be like, oh, this reminds me of, like,
an artist.
Yeah, some person that you've met at the comics fest that's, like, your friend that you talked to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think in some sense, I've always had ambivalence about this too, is like comics that feel they need to allude to fine art to have relevance. This is a, you know what I mean by that? Like, oh, this
oh,
is
yeah,
a, this looks like this artist, or this is a story about fine art, so thus it is fine art, or it starts to sniff at the potential of being it. This, I think, is a shortcut that is undignified.
Yeah, I think it's a little, I mean, it's just not super interesting, I guess, is maybe like the biggest problem.
Yeah, exactly. It's just self-referential in a boring way.
Yeah.
So let's get into the what you're working on currently, and that is a comic, right? Well, two comics.
Yeah, or I guess a couple of comics.
Well, Bora the Brain.
Yeah.
And I Am the Maggot.
Yeah, well, that Maggot one is actually like Dark Souls fan art that is kind of like, I guess it just has to be sort of like lower priority because it's fan art, but something I just want to do.
What's Dark Souls?
Oh,
it's a
yeah. It's a game that came out in 2011. It's like an action RPG that just sort of happens to have like a really, it has like a really good atmosphere. And I feel like it has a sort of sense of storytelling that's really, I don't know how to, what's the word? Kind of like, there's like a lot of, it doesn't really like string things together in a really linear way. But then there's like a lot that you can piece together yourself. And I feel like there's a lot of like attention to detail. Like actually the character that Maggot comic is about is this, like it never really tells you that much about him, but there's a point in which like in like a pretty normal playthrough of this game, like he'll die. Like you have to sort of like fight him and kill him. And then you sort of like pick up his armor as like an item after that happens. And if you just read the item description, it tells you sort of, it gives you sort of like a hint, or it fills in like the blanks about his personality. And it like never really like explains this at any other point in the game, but it just says like, oh, like this guy was like, cause he's kind of mysterious, and he's like, he helps you, so he seems obviously like pretty strong, or like stronger than you. And then you read his the thing for his armor, and it just says like, yeah, you know, this armor is completely normal, it's actually not that good. because like you know, he was so gifted or like so strong because of himself, because he worked so hard and like who he was as a person, but like his armor and his sword, like there's nothing special about it at all.
So it's a comic about him, this mysterious character.
Yeah.
Does he have a name?
It's Solaire. He's like one of the most popular characters, I think, in that whole,
Is this Dark Souls 1?
Yeah, that would be the first Dark Souls.
And that's from 2011. Do you still play this game?
Yeah, I actually didn't play it until like 2020 or 2021, I think. Mm.
And did you play it a lot, or was it just simply inspiring from this narrative perspective?
I mean, I guess I've only completed a playthrough of it once, which took me a while, but yeah, I guess it was just really, it was sort of just like a world that I like to think about or like be in, you know.
Is it just medieval in some ways?
Yeah, it's sort of like a mishmash of like medieval things, or I guess the aesthetic is like kind of like closer to like high medieval fantasy sort of stuff, but then everything's sort of like ruined or like it feels sort of like a world that is sort of falling apart or like decaying a bit, and it's like really lonely.
Hmm. Is that created the shift in more towards this particular aesthetic that feels more knightly and medieval and human?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think that's something I've always sort of been attracted to, or I've always sort of like carried with me, even before like knowing about these games or playing them. But I think like maybe like the human part of it, like maybe I that was like more inspired by Dark Souls.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear, especially fan art, which is complicated, right? I think we can all agree.
I guess so. I mean, it's simple in the sense of, like, I just want to make this thing because I liked that character.
Right.
I wish I had more of it. But it's like, it's only, I can't really, like, I guess, like, do much with it, quote unquote. But it's just like a, you know, you're only making that because you like that thing. Like, there's not really a benefit for you.
Right. It's like, it's almost too shameless. It's so unabashed. It's just like, this is what I like and I'm doing it. But yeah. That's just fine, yeah. Obviously. But I think it's cool to see how it's influencing the, what I will call the actual work, which I think is distinct, you know?
Yeah, I'd say so.
And so, because I was kind of assuming, you're going to figure drawing classes and you're doing this kind of study, more traditional process of study. But to then hear it's evoked from a video game is interesting to me.
Well, I mean, I think like wanting to make fan art of this thing that had human characters sort of like was inspiring to, or that sort of was like motivation for me to just sort of work on my figured drawing and my sense of anatomy. But I mean, like, I haven't been like drawing from like the game because the bodies are kind of like not super, well, I guess they're fairly realistic, but they're like just like really stiff.
Actually, it reminds me that the work that you had sent to me when I ran a gallery was actually somewhere in between these two worlds. It was these portraits of a female head with a neck that looked like a fish. It feels fishy to me. Yeah.
Was it a
harpy?
Hmm. Yeah, I remember harpy. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think of like what the actual.
Yeah, they're very interesting. They're kind of.
Was it like black? Like a black?
It was very background. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, very much I remember those.
So do you spend what's the breakdown on a typical week in terms of how much time is spent on comics versus fine art, or is it not very formulaic in that sense? Is it more erratic?
I'd say it's like mostly, it's way, way more comics at this point. Because I guess it's just like what I'm more interested in at the end of the day. And then it sort of like requires more time, at least of course, I think for me. Yeah.
So would that be Bore of the Brain is the main recipient of that attention?
Well, it was for a bit, and then I've had like a few like kind of smaller sort of like shorter comics that I've sort of committed to doing for like a couple of anthologies and stuff, or I've had some like illustration work that's come up too, and I'm honestly not really I'm really not like efficient at working on things. I'm like horrible at time management, so I've spent sort of like most of my time the past few months doing things that aren't related to that longer comic. But still making comics, I think.
So I'd like to hear more about horrible time management. What is that? What is that?
who doesn't want to?
what is that? What does that mean?
Let me tell you.
Like you think you're going to finish this. Let's say you take a page, right? And you're like, I'm going to finish this in 8 hours. And then what it takes
just
3 days.
I'd say that's sort of like part of it. I think for me, it's also like, I think when it comes down to it, I've timed myself for like several comics related tasks in the past to sort of try to get like an average sort of expected time. And it's like doing that calculation, like adding the average times that it would take to like pencil and ink things, and like sort of like even buffering it out to be like, you know, like using like the higher end of like the times for that data. It seems like I should be able to do like sort of like 30 pages in a month. But then that doesn't work out at all. It's like, I think it's possible. But it's like, I think I just never learned sort of like how to regulate myself alone when there's not like an outside, sort of like job to answer to.
Right. So if you had like an anthology or an illustration, you're good.
Generally, I mean, not always, because I mean, you know, with a lot of like anthologies that are maybe like more like indie comics, like I feel like there's always this thing where for a lot of them, you know, the deadline will shift a lot just because of like people's schedules changing. So then it's sort of like, it's like, oh yeah, I was going to push. If the deadline had stayed the same, I would have just like pushed really hard to like finish it in time. But now it's like, oh yeah, you know, actually you could have like another few months.
Right.
To finish this. And then, you know, it's inevitable that you like take that extra time, and then you just, it's like 3 months later, you only need like 10 pages of this thing or something.
Well, I think there's at least two kinds of bad time management. One that's just the result of a kind of poetic absorption. The other that's just like genuinely disorganized.
Yeah.
But I assume you're the former.
I don't know. No, I don't think so. I think it's just, because it's like, I think if it was the former, then I'd feel better about it. But it's like, I'm just like constantly thinking about how it's, you know, like, cause it's like, it's not really like, I'm not sort of like poetically absorbing things. I mean, sometimes it's like, you know, you can, you just have days where you're like, you just sort of have to like sit down and then like play the story out in your head to like try to figure it out, and you're just like kind of literally doing nothing. But A lot of times it's just like being disorganized, being like afraid to work on the thing because of some sort of like perfectionism or anxiety, and then just like procrastinating a ton. And then I don't know, like, you know, maybe like some sort of like minor level of like depression that's sort of like always in the back or of your mind or something that sort of like makes you predisposed to like not taking action or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Understood. Do you make a living off of drawing?
Not really yet. I feel like it feels like it's possible. Mm-hmm. Like maybe like in a year or two, I'll be able to do it. I've sort of just like have been lucky enough to have like a pretty low cost of living. And then also, I've been able to sort of like save enough to like live off of for a bit, where it's like, I'll get like illustration jobs, like sort of at the right moments or something.
Nice.
But that could totally, my luck could run out at any time.
But you're afforded the opportunity to focus on, like, you wake up and the day is about drawing.
Yeah. Which is like,
that's great.
You know, super, super lucky.
Have you tried to work jobs like that were more drawing based?
Oh, no.
No.
Like, I guess I don't even know what that would.
Well, I guess, yeah, the thing that comes to my mind is like animation industry stuff, but which would be fascinating.
That seems like really hard. Like, I feel like that's, I don't know how people do animation.
It's definitely more regimented, but your work animated would look very nice, I think.
Maybe. I mean, I think if I tried to like work in animation in any way, it would really quickly, expose like a lot of weaknesses in my, because here's the thing, I wonder if you, this makes sense to you, or it's like I feel like there are people who are like really, really good at drawing or making like a single illustration, but then when they try to, or you know, when they try to make a comic, you're like, oh, a lot of these drawings are actually kind of not that good. Or this whole thing as a comic, like, kind of isn't that great. But it's like, you know, that person can draw. And it's just because, you know, a comic is like now you have to draw like a bunch of things from like a bunch of different angles. And you have to like repeat a lot of things that you draw. So it sort of just like exposes all these like, maybe like weaknesses you might have. And I feel like animation, I assume, would be a step above that, where it's like, oh, you really can't like, you can't really hide anything now, because it's like you just need to draw like everything. Like, I don't know, that seems like so terrifying.
From an outsider perspective, at least in animation, each individual drawing is hidden, and so if you understand like flow, I think you could probably, like, someone like Ralph Bakshi's probably not an amazing drawer, but, and actually debatably not a good animator, he's just got a lot of funk, you know. And
yeah, that's true.
So there's a lot of different things you could play with, but no, I agree. I mean, comics, that's what I like about comics, is it forces you to, well, as you put it, it exposes your weaknesses very brutally.
Yeah.
Unless you're willing to just kind of make like very boring stylized comics. Otherwise you're going to run into, you know, what, if I had to draw a building in the style I work in, what is that? If I have to draw someone in the corner of a room who's small, you know, like, there's so much when you're left to your own devices drawing, and at least for me, just drawing what you want, or kind of more in like a art mode, you kind of tend to, you don't expand as much. You don't.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Cause narratively, because you get into the narrative element and then you have to figure out how to make it work. And to me, that's like comics are going to the, like the equivalent to going to the gym or something. They're just they're not fun per se. They are, but they will benefit you and your health from only from a drawing perspective, of course.
Yeah. From like every other perspective, like kind of a detriment, but.
So I think it's just amazing from a schooling perspective. I think it's a incredible thing. And no, I know what you mean that. I mean, it's people can get very far with their limits. I think there are definitely people who can draw everything. I think, like, I imagine Mobius could sit down and draw what he had to draw.
Yeah,
and there'd probably be very little limitation to prevent him from that. But then I think there's absolutely people who draw where it's like they can only explore that one little box. But that's not a bad thing. I just don't think it always works for comics, which demands a lot, I would say.
Yeah. And, you know, I've read comics or manga more specifically in the past few years where I was like really, really not into the drawings at all. And I thought they were like a bit weak in certain ways. But then, like, I don't know. It's like something about it as a comic is like so strong that you just accept it, or it's like it's totally fine, or you can actually sort of like still immerse yourself.
Wow, yeah, that's the opposite for me. I can't. You're saying visually it's not where it needs to be, but narratively you can get through it, right?
Yeah, or it's like, you know, it's fine. Like, it's, I guess the only like maybe the drawings are a little like off, but it's like still really clear like what's happening. And there's just something like, maybe it just has sort of like a kind of like hard to define sort of like quality to it that makes you like kind of draws you in still, even if you think it looks kind of awkward. And then like if it's also like really well written, that helps too. Like I'd rather read a comic that has drawings that I don't really like, but it's like a really good comic than one that has like really nice drawings and is just sort of like not that interesting, I guess.
Hmm. Yeah, I think I feel the opposite, but I think I'm just more visually interested in it. Like I have a bunch of comics I can't even read.
Yeah.
You know, language wise, but I'm just, these drawings are awesome. And frankly, you can probably follow a comic without even having to read the speech bubbles.
That's true. Unless it's some sort of like I don't know, super heady plot, kind of obscure thing.
Do you read comics?
Oh yeah, I read a lot of comics. I mean, I read mostly manga at this point, but
I see that
the most that I read. Yeah.
In Bora, there's one panel here with the, I believe it's a Cinnabon, and up to the eye. The background is very evocative. I don't know why. It's just like the spacing of the stars is very manga to me. It's very sparse.
Oh, yeah.
And also the speech. Yeah, the speech bubble in the text.
That's funny. The that font I have mixed feelings about. I've been actually sort of like going through like a weird problem with my least favorite part of making a comic is hand lettering the letters.
What's your process for that?
I just do it.
You just do it.
I used to be really, I used to just not really do much like digitally, and I also didn't really know like how to scan my stuff and sort of process it in a way that made sense for print, which I think is just like I never really learned that in sort of like a complete way. And I mean, it seems like I should have picked it up at some point, but for some reason I just never did. But yeah, I used to like for this one comic, I just sort of, you know, I would draw the letters by hand, and then I would hate how they turned out. And then I would just sort of like cut pieces of paper and like collage them over it and just like do that over and over again until it looked good. And it would it felt like it kind of took longer than actually like drawing the thing. But I was like, oh, you know what? And also like in the interests of just sort of making it like easier to read. Like I'd rather have it where the letters sort of like just fade into the background and you kind of like forget, like you don't really notice them. You're just reading them. I thought I would try out some fonts, and that font is one that I think this publisher Vertical uses. It looks like the font that they use in most of their books.
Strangely, what it reminds me of, which I kind of like, is if this mm-hmm. comic was in a different language and some random person uploaded it and dubbed, and I don't know if you call it dubbing, but they translated it and just put their
text. Yeah, they do like a scanlation. Yeah.
And then especially because it's on a scroll and it's digital right now, it evokes that for me.
Yeah, I wonder if that's also kind of like, because it's sort of like awkwardly, it's like a little bit of like a mismatch. Or it feels like it's not original to the art or something like that. I got to figure that out.
I mean, I'm going to recommend something. I'm not sure it's going to work, but it's a technique I've used. I'm not good at lettering, I would say, but I just printed out a giant sheet of the type I would use, and then I would ink over it so that it would. I could do it really quickly. But it wouldn't look so disjointed from the drawings, which I don't like typically. Like I find it weird in kids' books when it's like just Times New Roman next to a very loose or washy thing. I don't like that feeling. But like I just use the same tool I used to draw and then would trace over the computer text or font, and then at least there it would start to have variation and feel not like a typeface. But that was the quickest solution I ever found to that problem.
That's actually really smart. I should
because if you use your, I don't know what you use, do you use a nib?
So for that Bora comic, I've been using like I've been trying to figure out like what the ideal thing is, because I also for a long time I didn't really like pencil and ink comics.
What do you mean? Oh, because there was no ink involved?
Yeah, they were just like in colored pencil or whatever. I guess like now none of these comics are on my website right now, but I've sort of settled into using like a brush and then what do you call it, like a technical pen.
I think I know what you mean. Basically, what the heck's the company everyone uses when they're like 15 years old?
Oh, Rapidograph, I think is like the really popular
Secura?
One.
Secura?
Oh, like the Micron? The ones that are like not disposable. And then the tip is metal. It's the same thing, basically. Like it's like a similar type of kind of uniform line.
Yeah. No, I like the feel. It's a good line. Then you use kind of fat. I'm assuming you use digital processes for the zip tone.
It's just like no other practical way to do that, I think.
Financially and just availability, it would be tough.
And also just like frustration. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't really want to deal with like a physical screen tone, I think.
Yeah. What is your relationship to the digital process? I see that there's a more recent post that handles it quite nicely, the feeling of a digital
painting. Yeah, I mean, I like it. I think for the comic stuff, it's like super, super helpful. It's just taken me a long time to get used to it. And I still feel like I've kind of been enjoying like just making drawings, like just like color drawings digitally, but like I still feel like it's really, really hard to actually like start a drawing on the computer for me, because I feel like I actually just can't get over like, I can't kind of understand like how to compose things for some reason. Like, it's like really hard for me to get the basic drawing down.
Digitally.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's a lot easier just doing it on paper.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And then it's also quicker to like draw stuff on paper. Like, I feel like, I mean, for me at least, because I'm still figuring stuff out digitally, it's like I waste a lot of time just like sort of messing around and trying to like get like a certain effect that I want, or like a certain feeling, like I'm thinking about it too much. But then, you know, if it was a drawing on paper, it's like, well, this is how this pen draws. Like, I'm not going to be able to like adjust it or anything.
Right. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's much more, what would you say? If you have a divergent mind, the digital process can be a nightmare. But if you're more convergent and it's like those, I don't know how to word it. It's just like, for me, I'm just like, I'm just going to use the hard round, basic, stupid digital brush and move on, you know, like, and then
yeah.
I think in my life I've probably used like 3 brushes in Photoshop. It's the same way I feel about mixing paint. I don't mix paint. I just pick up a marker. I don't want to, in that instance, there's also a financial reason, but in that instance, I feel like mixing paint is just not my, my thing. And I'd rather the comfort of a fixed marker, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. I mean, I relate to that pretty hard because I feel like there's part of me that does actually kind of enjoy mixing paint, but it's just like, it's, you know, it's been like an hour and I've just been like adding like little bits of color into this thing that's just like gray now. Like, why did I do this?
Right. So what's the ultimate plan for Bora?
I guess right now it's just my main worry is sort of just like making it like kind of improving with comics technically. And I guess that's sort of like my main project for like figuring that out. I guess I would like, I want to publish it eventually, or like, you know, find a way to like have it sort of lead me into like more sustainable like comics work. But I guess, yeah, right now, like the biggest thing I'm worried about with that is just sort of like actually making it.
Mm-hmm. And is Bora this strange, it's this flat,
yeah,
nosy creature?
Yeah. There's a, I think it's also, this is sort of my first attempt at making like a longer story, and it's kind of like a bit of a mess right now because I've sort of just been like writing it as I go, and like, you know, I have like sort of like larger ideas that I am thinking about, or like I sort of know the general direction, or like you know, like emotionally where it goes, but then I think, yeah, there's just like a lot of things about it that to me at least are like pretty awkward, because it's like I am sort of like figuring out a lot of stuff as I work on it.
Yeah, no. Do you understand how long it'll be?
So I had this like sort of idea in my head, like I don't know, this is like, maybe it's weird to like think about this because it's like, oh yeah, how do I even know? I guess like fairly long. I kept thinking of like sort of a story with like I was trying to think of another like comic or like manga that I had read that feels, and then I was like, oh yeah, that's sort of like the length, or like the, I want something that's generally like that length, I guess, or feels like that.
Yeah.
That full. And the one that I think about like a comparable series for like the length of it would be like, I think it's like 6 volumes, and then each one would be like maybe like 200 pages. So I guess that would be like how much total? Like over 1,000? I don't know.
Okay, so you're shooting for over 1,000. How many years, you think?
Probably a while.
That's cool, though. I think it's worth going big.
Yeah, or it's just, I mean, you kind of just have to, this could be total, like, bullshit. you have all these, like, ambitious ideas, but then it's, like, in actual practice, like, yeah, I could make, like, 300 or 500 pages of this and then be like, oh,
that would still be cool.
Enough.
That would still be
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yeah. I guess, like, any, whatever it is would be fine. It's just as long as it exists.
So you're making this, it's not as if you say, oh, I kind of have a script in my head and it sounds like it'll take 300 pages. You're more so looking at a substantial manga and saying, I want something that is that present.
I guess so. Or something that has, how do I explain it? Like that much space would be needed to like sort of develop like the characters in a way that I think that I want.
Well, there's something endearing about this little Bora.
Oh, good. I'm glad he's kind of
in a strange way.
You might not think so later, but
well, we'll see.
Yeah.
This is a bit random, but have you read Bakune Young?
No, I haven't.
I think you might find that interesting as a reference point. It is a very weird giant manga that is translated on it. I mean, entirely possible I'm pronouncing it wrong, but I'll send you the. I forget where you can read it online, but it's something else. And it might inspire something.
I'm looking it up right now. Because I feel like if I see the cover...
Yeah, you might recognize it.
No, I don't. It's like the name
truly
is
bizarre.
Familiar, but...
I want to say it's like around 1,000 pages in totality, but I'm not certain. That's what made me think about it. But it also balances this very odd aesthetic that is quite admirable.
Like the drawings just have like a weird...
Yeah, well, mixture. Like throughout the book, there's just really simplified forms, really detailed forms, weird abstractions, weird possessions of certain characters by this like big head. It's
some pages from it, and it looks really good.
It's strange.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm looking at a page that looks like a...
Well,
like a
yeah,
pretty different style.
Yeah, I'm shocked by it every time I look at it. Wow, it's insane. I would recommend that book to everyone. It's very unique.
Yeah, I'll definitely check it out.
There's something audacious about making something like that gigantic because it's so weird. There's no market, per se.
Right.
No immediate market. No one's sitting down and saying, I'm going to do this because...
It's not like focus group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I imagine this Bora, if it was large, would evoke a similar thing. It's not like there's a... It's not going to turn into a Netflix series, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, maybe.
You know what? Well,
I should be more optimistic.
I don't know if that would make me feel good or bad.
I mean, I think sometimes there's something funny about just the way a strange comic or book gets handled. There's a and brought over into like a context like that can be entertaining.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, it could be fun. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen like an adaptation of a comic that I really liked, I guess. But I'm like super biased because I just like the comic better.
So let's end it on a recommendation. What's a manga that someone should read?
It's hard because there's so many.
Yes, it's a gigantic world.
Shit, I can't even like Okay, this is like kind of maybe like not a good recommendation for like everyone, but it's weird because you know, if you just walk into Barnes and Noble now, there's like a ton of manga. Mm-hmm. Like the manga section is actually like pretty large, and there's like a lot of people over there, which is like super encouraging. And you can, it's weird that you can find certain things there, because I'm like there's some stuff that's like pretty explicit that you can still find at like a Barnes and Noble. There's a series that I think you should be able to find in a bookstore pretty easily, because the second volume just came out recently. But it's by this publisher, Kuma, or I mean, it's not by the publisher, but mm-hmm. it's like really, it's by an artist named Harada.
Harada.
And then, yeah. And it's called Happy Crappy Life.
Terrible name.
Yeah, it's appropriate for yeah. like the feeling of the comic. Yeah.
Happy Crappy
Life. I'm thinking about it now. This is sort of like a really bad recommendation.
No, that's fine.
Sort of
well, that's interesting, just even visually. Well.
Yeah, and it's released by this publisher that translates a lot of like, they kind of specialize in like gay, sort of sometimes like explicit mm-hmm. comics. And there's like a lot of tropes that sort of go into this genre, especially with manga, that I find like really annoying or like not very interesting. But I feel like this comic actually goes against a lot of that. And it's also like, I think the person who, the author is like a really good writer in terms of like making a comic.
No, that's cool. And I think it's interesting to see that reference point. Because I've never even heard of this, and it seems like something I would never even have stumbled upon.
It might be, I feel like a lot of people would find it kind of trashy, but I feel like as a comic, it's actually like the pacing is like really, really, really well done. And I think the sense of humor is actually really good. And I feel like that's something that I feel like there's a lot of comics that are kind of funny, but I don't think they're like that funny.
Is that something you'll be striving for in Bora? Is a sense of humor?
No, I don't think so. Cause I feel like that's not really like, I mean, not like in the way that this comic does it, like maybe in sort of like I feel like I'm okay at doing things that are funny, that are like just like really stupidly funny. But I think in terms of writing something that's actually kind of like sharp and like can actually kind of make you laugh out loud, I don't think I can really do that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So do you imagine that the next book you publish will be Bora, or there'll be something between that people should be looking out for?
I don't know, actually. I guess it depends. It would probably be boring. I just feel like it's probably, I mean, I'll just keep posting it online. I guess that's sort of like publishing it. But I feel like in terms of like it being published in an actual way, like it might actually kind of take like a long time to find.
Yeah, physically.
A way to get that to happen. Yeah.
Well, I did find the Rising Star.
Oh, great.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, it's pretty average, but it's like, I don't know, it's nice that exists and I can still...
It's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad, but it's, I'd say it's like pretty, it seems like something that a 15-year-old would make.
Well, better than the average 15-year-old for sure, but it's interesting to see certain poses and things that are carried from this into your work now.
Yeah. I bet there's more than I even think that there is.
Do you mind if I link to it in the description?
Fine.
Well, some people don't. Yeah. I don't know why they're weird about when they were 15, what they made, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I understand that.
Well, if you made that today, sure. But this is not the case.
I think that would be kind of worrying.
Yes.
That'd be a bad time.
Well, good talking to you. Good to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
And thank you for taking your time to do this.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
Have a good day.
Yeah, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Music by Dori Bavarsky and Mingja Chen. Next up, we have Dan Bunn. Enjoy your week.